Welcome to the Conservative Thought Hour, where America always comes first.
I'm proud to be an American.
Each week, we bring you captivating guests who will speak on many topics of national interest. We are not interested in telling you what to think or how to think. We have faith that you can do that for yourself. Our interest is to bring you information to help you form your own opinions. As always, the views expressed by our guests are their own and are not necessarily shared by the host or the station you are listening to. Get ready for enlightenment with the Conservative Thought Hour.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
And now, here are your hosts, Carrie Black and Rick Stannard.
And welcome to another hour of the Conservative Thought Hour. You can hear us here every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. until 10, right here on your information station for Southwest Florida. We are WENG. Happy Saturday. It's Carrie Black along with my co-host Rick Stannard, political activist. And good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
I am fabulous. There is a powerful movement happening with the Republican Party. It's driven by level-headed conservatives who are fed up with the extremism and fear stoked by the Trump presidency. You might be saying, what? At the helm of this movement is Jeff Duncan. He's the Republican Lieutenant Governor of Georgia, and he's also a first-time author of a new book, GOP 2.0, How the 2020 Election Can Lead to a Better Way Forward for America's Conservative Party, which has been making waves and recently covered by The Washington Post, AP News, Newsweek, and the Bulwark podcast, among others. Jeff Duncan is with us and joins us this morning. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. Great to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet.
Yeah, Jeff, you have a new book out called GOP 2.0, How the 2020 Election Can Lead to a Better Way Forward for America's Conservative Party. Can you give us a synopsis of what we might expect in this book?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. You know, most folks are surprised to find out I actually started writing it before the entire election meltdown debacle in November through January. It was just like millions of other Republicans. I really loved and championed a majority of the policies that were coming forward from the Republican Party and the former president. But I just felt like we needed a better approach. And unfortunately, the 10 weeks between January November and January just reinforced that better approach. And we started to go to work on putting together a plan that one, talked about some of the things that we did really, really well as a party and some of the things that we need to improve on, much like a boardroom. You know, a boardroom sits around there and they talk about the things they do well and the things that they can do better and do an honest assessment. And that's really what GOP 2.0 is about, is how do we harness the things we're really good at? And how do I identify and move forward with the things that we need to improve on?
Cool. Where can our listeners find your book, Jeff?
Well, you can visit our website at gop2.org, gop2.org, or they can go check out Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, anywhere that's online or in store.
Okay, all the usual suspect places. Okay, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Jeff, listen, how can the GOP, how can they come back from the Trump era and try to do their best to appeal to moderates again?
Well, look, this is a center-right-leaning country, and I think we have to recognize that. We don't have to run from it. We don't have to hide from it. It is a center-right-leaning country, and the folks that we're losing that are costing us these elections are with us on 7, 8 out of 10 issues. And so we don't have to convince folks that they got to be with us 10 out of 10 to vote for us. We just need to make sure that we remind folks all across the country in living rooms and break rooms and boardrooms that, you know, a Republican's best in charge of the economy. We're best at trying to build the future of this country through the economic strength. We're best at public safety. We're not going to mention defund the police as a good campaign slogan at the risk of alienating officers and putting folks in harm's way. We're going to make sure that we put our best foot forward on national security and don't run into the amok mess that we're watching play out in Afghanistan. We just need to dig back into the roots of what we're really, really good at and remind people. But we also need to be willing to have conversations about some of the other areas around immigration, healthcare, things that we just do a lot of complaining about, but don't necessarily come up with good reforms.
Well, Jeff, let me ask you, how do you define a conservative? What is a conservative in your mind?
Yeah, I think a conservative for me starts at home. It's how you live your life, how you run your business. And it's not about 10-second sound bites on Twitter. Or 280 characters on Twitter. It's about truly, genuinely believing that limited government is the cornerstone, and we the people have got to be the solution. We've got to make sure that we're able to be personally responsible for ourselves. And we need to make sure that we don't try to, cast big ideas that are shallow and short-natured and only win elections. I think conservatism plays out best in the long game, not the short game. It's really the weapon that we're giving the other side to beat us up with. Is conservatism is something that you just got to believe in long term, and ultimately it's going to allow you to live the life that you want to live. It's going to allow you to retire. It's going to allow you to accomplish your dreams and get the job that you want and raise your family and live in safe communities and live in a safe country. Conservative values start with personal responsibility.
Thank you for that. I think we sometimes lose track. We use the term conservative, but we've lost what it means, and it's nice to have somebody be able to center us on what they mean as a conservative. One of the questions I have, we seem to be a country moving towards two separate constitutions, the original constitution as written and the progressives' favorite living document, which means it doesn't actually say anything except what we want it to say at the moment. Which constitution are you a fan of?
Well, I think the founding fathers were brilliant, and their work was miraculous, nothing short of miraculous. To just think about the forethought that they put into that document is one that stands the test of time. And in my opinion, we need to get back to understanding how this country and what we've had to sacrifice for those freedoms that the Constitution allows us to have, and why we are different than every other country in the world. We continue to feel like we're apologizing for that, and certainly we shouldn't. And it is troubling to watch the Constitution go from a living, breathing document into a doormat, and one that's talked down to. It certainly is what separated us from what the rest of the world looks like, and I certainly believe that we ought to protect it. And for full disclosure, that's really one of the great things that I think Donald Trump did as president was really build that Supreme Court in a way that I think the justices that he picked really truly understand the value of the document that was written by our founding fathers. And really sunk his teeth into understanding the importance of putting those conservative justices, constitutionalists on that judge panel.
Not only in the Supreme Court, but in the federal courts. He did a fabulous job.
Absolutely. I think the number is over 200 federal judges that were appointed into those positions that truly do believe. And quite honestly, that's the longest legacy that Donald Trump is going to leave behind, is going to be what he did in the court system. And certainly at times that branch of government is kind of not looked upon by the general public as important as the other branches. But the judicial branch really sets the tempo and tone for so much that's out there to protect our conservative values.
Speaking of Trump, Jeff, what did you think about Trump's recent Georgia rally?
Well, it was a disaster. And for somebody like me who considers themselves a true card-carrying conservative that really, truly wants to raise, my family, my three boys, and run my businesses in a conservative environment, to hear somebody get up there and to actually, and he said it twice, to say that he would vote for Stacey Abrams over Brian Kemp is just a disaster. And quite honestly, I think he did a huge disservice for him and those that have been following him, even the post-election, because he showed his hand. And his hand at this point is he cares more about himself than he does the party. And nobody in their right mind would get up there and try to speak against the most conservative governor in Georgia's history, just at the point of trying to save face. It was embarrassing to watch it play out. But you know what? In my opinion, it's going to accelerate a new direction for the party, one that embraces the things that he did well and is willing to improve on the things he didn't do well, like tone.
Mm-hmm. Boy, that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that I was cringing often at his use of Twitter.
So. Yeah, a lot of the book talks about this acronym that I have called my pet project, Policy, Empathy, and Tone. And the T is tone. And if I got a dollar for every time somebody said to me, look, I really like what President Trump's doing. I just wish he'd put that phone down. I'd probably be as rich as y'all are, but he just couldn't help himself. And there's a couple of really good behind the scenes stories. I say really good. They were eye opening more than anything. In the book, I got invited to ride in the Beast with him, and it was just a phenomenal 25 minutes. I just could never imagine myself ever riding in a car with the President of the United States. But it was a situation where he was on camera earlier in the day with CNN, and he got in the car and he said, did you see the interview? And I said, I did. And he said, well, they tried to make me look old and feeble and weak, and they're doing digital settings. And he said, what should I do, Jeff? I said, well, Mr. President, if you're asking my advice, I just ignore it. If you tell them it bothers you, they're going to keep doing it. Just let it go and keep winning. Just keep winning. And he said, you know, Jeff, I really like that advice. And he paused for about 5 seconds. And he looked at me and he goes, but I can't help myself. I got to say something. And he gets out of the car and there he goes.
Yeah.
And that was a peek into who he was.
He definitely is a combative human being.
No.
You know, if you take a swing at him, you better be ready to defend yourself.
And I think there's an element of that. I mean, every poll you look at talks about that, you know, what folks most like about Donald Trump, and that the word always comes back to fight. He's willing to fight.
Yep.
I think GOP 2.0 is about shaping that fight to better help individuals, right? To better help Americans, make Americans great again. Because if we can shape that fight to be something that really drives taxes down for folks, hardworking folks, or improve education or give economic opportunity, I think that fight can just resonate into people's lives.
Well, Jeff, you know, I spend a lot of time out in the hustings, as they used to say, talking to people on the street, a lot of time. And I don't think there's much of a way, an easy way, for the Republicans to become one party again. There is so much anger and so much disappointment at years of watching Republicans side with a further left Democratic Party. So, Jeff, my feeling after talking to a lot of people in the street is that there's an enormous amount of anger at the Republican leadership and how it is sided more and more often against the Constitution and with the Democrats on the left. And it's no longer just a casual unhappiness. There is real anger. And how do you propose to solve that issue and bring the party back together? What steps would you take?
Yeah, certainly, you know, you're playing 3D chess at this point because there are factions and fractions inside of the Republican Party. You know, I'm optimistic because I don't feel like there's as big of divide amongst Republicans via the policies that we stand for. We're strong Second Amendment supporters. We believe in the limited government approach and the other tenets of that. And plus, Joe Biden's making it easy for us to just simply put on display what conservative leadership could look like. But the divide's got to start solving itself by stop the anger and the hate, right? I mean, there's a shelf life to that. And unfortunately, we watched that play out, or fortunately, whichever way you look at it, that in the 2020 election cycle, America reached its tipping point. You know, we talk about Donald Trump got 74 million votes, and that's a tremendous number, but he got the second highest ever behind Joe Biden. And because of that anger and that angst that was put into the airwaves every single minute of every single day, it drove the other side out that normally doesn't sit there and pick a side. But they picked a side against Republicans because they just aren't – humans don't gravitate over the long term towards a divisive tone. It just doesn't work long term. It's short term. We've all been a part of an organization or a company or a sports team that feels good because everybody's rough and tumble. But at the end of the day, you're not winning, or you're not solving problems, or you're not making money, because you got to work together and the culture's got to be inviting. And I think that's the element of the secret sauce for us with Republicans, is how this is going to move so quickly, is we are going to be inviting to those that are with us on 10 out of 10 issues and 9 out of 10 issues and 8 out of 10 issues. And they're going to come back to the Republican well and give us the keys to the corner office and say, go lead us in the right direction now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to play Wizard of Oz for a moment here with you, and I'm going to give you an absolute control over the country. You talk about limited government. How would you, what steps would you take to control the size of our government? What would you do?
Well, all things are driven by dollars. And the purse strings have got to stop. We have a national security crisis on our hand called our national debt.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody ran their business or their homes like that, I mean, this almost sounds like a non-event when you say it, because we've all heard it a million times. We would be out of business, bankrupt, or sleeping on the streets. But instead, as our government thinks it's okay to keep doing it, including under the leadership of Donald Trump. I don't think fiscal conservatives can be anywhere near happy with his leadership. So the way you do it is you got to stop thinking that the government has the solution to every problem. You've got to start believing in people and communities to be a part of solving those problems. I have an acronym called the 4 C's: churches, charities, corporations, and citizens. We need to start leaning into them to be the solutions around the situations around poverty, homelessness, hunger, healthcare for low-income individuals, foster care, adoption. We need to lean into the 4 C's, because at the end of the day, if a government program operates on all cylinders, it does everything perfect. All they do is stabilize somebody that's in need. They don't actually give them an exit strategy. But if a church or a charity or a corporation or just a group of citizens show up and want to help somebody in need, they bring tools like innovation, volunteerism, which is exponential,
mm-hmm.
and exit strategy. They care about getting that person off the streets and into a successful lifestyle, or away from an abusive setting and into a parent that loves and cares for their future. To me, the way we got to shrink government is through a mindset. We've got to stop thinking that we've got the solution to the problem with a government check.
Well, you mentioned corporations, and I have to ask you, we read all through the newspaper, we see it on television, about places like Coca-Cola, one of Georgia's biggest companies, telling their employees to be less white. Can we actually look to that kind of a corporation for any help?
Well, certainly if a corporation wants to write a check into, I've actually set up a tax credit program here in Georgia. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I'm the lieutenant governor. I talk about that in my book a lot, a rural hospital tax credit bill, where I allow corporations and citizens to write checks directly to rural hospitals. And if Coca-Cola or Delta or all the other companies that are here want to do that and participate, mm-hmm. that's great. You know, I think one of the things we had to have a conversation about here in Georgia is, as much as I disagreed with the stance that Coke and Delta and some other companies took based upon some election reform legislation that we had here in Georgia, they're publicly traded businesses. And at the end of the day, they should be held accountable by their shareholders and by their employees. And although I disagree with them, I don't want to get in their way, because if you flip the tables and you have a company doing the right things and you have a different type of leadership at the state level, you run the risk of a Stacey Abrams, as Donald Trump wants to be our next governor. You have a Stacey Abrams that's mandating things or leaning into those businesses and telling them what to do. So, look, I hope to not have the friction that we've got, but I don't want to get in the way of them running their businesses. And at the end of the day, I get to choose as an employee where I want to work and what I want to work for.
All right. In your book, chapter one is called November, the Fraud Hoax. What's that all about?
Well, it's a deep dive into the facts and figures of debunking all of the crazy, ridiculous conspiracy theories that were flying in from outer space. And that's exactly what it was. There was a sore loser attitude going on. The facts were starting to be put on the table. And, you know, there was these kind of evildoers out there stirring the pot and trying to look for scenarios that were potential gaps in the law. Then they created fictitious scenarios around it, found bits and pieces of film and video, and then fueled the fire by pumping it out on social media. And you got what you got in Georgia. You got a disaster on our hands. The most legal, fair election in the history of the state of Georgia got, you know, hijacked by a bunch of political vigilantes to try to make us out to look like we don't know what we're doing, all in the fact of either trying to flip an election or trying to save face and off-gas the fact that Donald Trump missed a layup. He just did. Nobody was on the court. He had the ball going down, dribbling with three vaccines, a whipsawing economy, global support, all of the things that should have won him a re-election, and he missed the layup and turned around and blamed the entire stadium. That was his fault, not ours.
Well, it's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you that in January, I volunteered in Georgia for the runoff election, and I spent 2 weeks in Buckhead, beautiful place, love it dearly, mm-hmm. Manning the phones for people to call in with election irregularities, and the phones were very busy, and I can tell you that I had people telling me their lives were threatened if they voted. I had people telling me that their lives were threatened if they even volunteered at the polling place. I had people from Mississippi calling me and telling me that the Georgia Democrats were inviting them to come. They'd put them up in a hotel, get them temporary citizenship, and let them vote. Mm. So, you know, a lot of people are confused over what the truth is of the election. I'm not confused. I saw it happening, and it's disgusting to me.
Yeah. Well,
indeed, I read the Arizona Maricopa audit from top to bottom, and that's as frightening as anything I've ever read.
Yeah, I think your scenario you paint out is one, obviously, you were on the ground and answering a phone. My life, too, was threatened. My wife's life was threatened. My three kids' lives were threatened, not by Democrats, not by terrorists, but by Republicans that were upset that I didn't have any facts or proof sitting on my desk. In fact, I feel it as an embarrassing moment in a Republican in Republicans' minds, because we actually called to accountable law enforcement officers that were in charge of following up on every one of those scenarios that showed up at the Secretary of State's, at the Attorney General's office, the Governor's office, my office. We have actual law enforcement officers, GBI members and others, that followed up on every one of those leads and followed them to as far as they could. And I still have yet, I'm only 10 months into this, but I still have yet to have one single case presented on my desk that actually has a single ounce or shred of facts involved in it. And so it's not to dispute it. It's just nothing has risen to the level. And we, once again, as Republicans, continue to put a shiny object out there to distract the base and to confuse the middle as to what we really want to do in 2022 and 24. What I want to do is win. I have no chance to relitigate 2020, nor do I recommend any Republican do it, because it's only a distraction.
I'll agree with that. Totally. That's history. Let it go. It's time to win the next election.
Yeah. Yep.
But I tell you what, there's so much anger in people who are feeling ignored and betrayed, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
I could send you an email that would knock your socks off of what's happened to one lady. But it's just very difficult to imagine the country coming together for anything anymore.
Well, you know, look, I'm an optimist by nature, so I'm only one person away from the country coming together and the party moving forward and Republicans being in the driver's seat. And that one person, that one speech, that one moment of humility where Donald Trump walks up and says, you know what, for the good of the party, I'm going to step aside and I'm going to help the next generation of Republicans take control of this government. I'm going to help elect the next batch of Republicans, and I'm going to do it not looking backwards but looking forwards. It's one person. I only got to convince one person out of 350 million Americans to overnight be in the lead for Republicans taking control. But at the end of the day, it does take a splash of humility. It takes a splash of truth serum that there was no election fraud. And I think deep down, look, I don't receive any calls from Donald Trump anymore, but I think deep down he knows there's no fraud. He certainly doesn't have any sort of proof that shows that there was a fraud. It's just an opportunity to fundraise and galvanize his base. And maybe that's a good political idea, but that's certainly not an American idea.
There's been a lot of talk about Trump running for president in 2024. Do you think he has a chance to win? And tell us why or why not?
Well, if you're just looking at history alone, he has really no chance to be president again. I mean, history, even to the greatest performers in that office, just don't have a chance to come back and win again. I think you layer into that the chaos and confusion over the 10 weeks of the election conspiracy stuff, and then the events of January 6th, you start to see the distance from that job. So my belief is he's not going to be president of the United States again, and my hope is that he's not, because I think we need to improve on where we're at. We need to take what he did well and bottle it up and try to figure out a way to improve it, and then try to walk into these elections in 22 and 24 and really put our best foot forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. You talked a bit about the new talent coming up in the Republican Party, and I certainly agree with you. There is a lot of young people that make you want to stand up and shout, as far as I'm concerned. Who are your favorites? And then you obviously do not believe that Herschel Walker is one of those. Why does he not qualify?
Well, let's talk about the Herschel piece for a minute. I went to Georgia Tech, and Herschel went to Georgia.
Well, there you go.
That's the problem.
There's a little bit of a rivalry.
Huge problem.
All kidding aside, he's a tremendous talent. What an amazing career.
Yeah.
And just off the charts with how well he's loved here in Georgia. I just don't know anything about his politics. I don't think anybody in Georgia does. He's been very limited even since announcing, talking about it. I mean, really, the only thing I know about him is he's really good friends with Donald Trump. And certainly that carries a weight to it. But unfortunately, we learned that being endorsed by Donald Trump isn't enough to win with, including Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue. They gravitated towards that endorsement more than they did taking on and reminding Georgians of all the great things they did for us in their terms. Look, Herschel may be the greatest U.S. senator in the world, or he may not have a chance to beat Raphael Warnock. Time will tell. But certainly
that's
hoping
a scary to thought.
Yeah, certainly hoping to have a conservative in that Senate seat. And we should, right? Georgia is a conservative state and shouldn't be represented by very, very far left liberals. To the talent part, time will tell. I think the party's in the midst of a pivot point. I think we're going to have to flush out some folks that just had, kind of old standard bearers of what the Republican Party used to look like. I think we realized that Donald Trump was an outsider change agent, and there's a lot of successes to that. But we got to get somebody that can do it with a better tone and somebody that can understand what the value of genuine deep down leadership to get these big issues across the finish line and really tackle some of these issues. I think there's a blank canvas for Republicans. We talked in the first segment a little bit about healthcare. I think we've got to dive headfirst into healthcare as Republicans and really pull a real plan together, not one that gets demonized on GOP meetings on Saturday mornings just because 10 people get together and just want to scream about something, but genuinely dig into it and give a little bit of ground on a couple of those nuances that seem to be just, perfect fits for improving the Obamacare plan and allowing the cost of healthcare to genuinely come down and access to it so that folks all across America can go to a doctor, whether it be through a telehealth visit, whether it be in person, and not have healthcare being driven out of rural parts of the country because nobody can afford Obamacare. That's an issue ripe for the picking. And I think in 24, when we start shaping who's going to be the president or who's going to be the nominee for the Republican Party, which, by the way, GOP 2.0 hopefully has a significant influence in, we're going to have the ability to really get somebody who can dig deep into the policies and can deliver that to America, solving their problems. And that's an important part of this. GOP 2.0 is a book that's on sale right now, but it's a catalyst for the movement. The movement GOP 2.0 is really what's going to be the big net effect in this country.
Okay. Well, where does GOP 2.0 stand on federalism and the 10th Amendment?
Well, I think federalism is key. States' rights are massive. States are going to be better at making decisions than the federal government is. I mean, I look at our budget here in Georgia. I just hung up with my appropriations chairman to get an update on the budget a minute ago, right before. And we have over $6 billion in our rainy day fund. That means we are spending less than we are collecting, which means we have an opportunity to give those dollars back to the taxpayer where it belongs. But one of the unique periods of time that I think was a black eye on Republicans during the election debacle was that Texas lawsuit. Another state, I mean, who would think that a Republican would sign off on the idea of another state stepping into Georgia or Pennsylvania or another state and trying to sue them and disenfranchise their voters? What if you flip the political parties on that? I mean, you would just have, you know, you'd melt down if the other party was trying to do that to you. We need to make sure that federalism and the 10th Amendment is continued to be honored, because the more nimble we are, just like at the state level, I think local control makes more sense than the state mandating everybody do something. We need to let the decisions get driven as close to the taxpayer as we possibly can.
Absolutely. And I always go back to smaller federal government. I would love to see our legislature in Washington be a part-time job. Any country that needs a full-time legislature is too damn big to begin with.
Well, we got a lot of ground to cover before that's a possibility.
That's a whole nother show.
It takes a full-time job just to add up the debt.
Yeah.
So, yep. GOP 2.0 is, if it doesn't pull the Republicans together, it's just going to add, isn't it just going to add a third option? There'll be three sides to the conservative argument. The old Republicans, the GOP 2.0, and the Make America Great Again group. Can we live with a party so divided?
There's that chance. I hoped it to be an unlikely chance. If you read through the book, GOP 2.0, it's very inviting. It talks about the opportunities to expand the tent, reach into those communities that we need to join the team that are with us on so many of the issues, but just for whatever reason, they feel alienated from our conservative platforms for one reason or the other. And look, I hope not to have three factions. If we do, quite honestly, if we have two factions, we're going to end up in second place again, which is code language for losing. We can't have even two factions. The Democrats are well organized. They're wrong on all the issues, for the most part, but they're organized and they're financed and they communicate better and they're operating on all cylinders. And we need to do a better job, and we can't just keep, you know, screaming at each other. We've got to actually get up and go.
Absolutely. So why are Republicans pushing restrictive voting laws? And the restrictive, I'm not sure that the voting laws are restrictive. I mean, looking at what Georgia did, they actually made voting more available. But why all the complaints about restrictions?
Yeah, so we certainly had that conversation very loudly here in Georgia post-election. And there's a couple of angles to it. There were some things early on that flew out of the legislature as ideas, as initial legislation that I didn't agree with. I thought they were overreaches. I thought they were hat tips to the former president in a means to try to build up a strongly, you know, Republican district. It just didn't make sense. Felt like a losing sports team raising their ticket prices the next day, the next year. It's like you can do it, but it just isn't good timing. There's a lot of lessons we learned during the 10 weeks here in Georgia of things that we could do and improve because of the hyper focus. In fact, a number of things were bipartisanly agreed to as being improvements. And certainly that's where I think, we need to stay focused in on how to innovate around the elections, how to continue to keep them secure with changing technology, how we can have access, to the ballot in a modern society. But at the end of the day, we Republicans got to stop worrying about how many people vote and start worrying about how many people vote for us. That's where the real winning strategy is. We're thinking short-sighted if we try to prove to somebody they should vote for us just for one election cycle. We come up with enough buzzwords and creativity and tweets for them to come with us one time. It's too shallow and too expensive to do that. We've got to start putting on display like Ronald Reagan did, where he came up and said, you know what, I only got 7 million people to vote for. He won by 7 million in the first election. He won by 17 million in the second election. He convinced a whole crop of people that weren't with him initially to jump on the team. That's where we need to start going back to earning Republicans' votes, earning moderates' votes for that matter.
Yeah. Sometimes it appears as if we're not just fighting against the Democrats, so that they're really not the enemy, if I can put that term in there. We seem to be fighting against the transnationals, the George Soros crowd, and we seem to be fighting against the ultra-wealthy Jeff Zuckerberg crowd, and we seem to be fighting, most importantly, against China, because China has made incredible inroads into our country socially, economically, and politically. And the battle, we have to understand that it's not just the Democrats. It's the Democrats and a lot of other people, too.
Yeah, look, I'm certain all of those situations deserve attention and are worrisome in all their different ways. But just I'm going to share my brutal honesty. My opinion is the average American doesn't get all that. They don't get up in the morning at 5 o'clock, answer the alarm, get their kids ready for school and make it to work on time and worry about making what their paycheck's going to be on the 15th and 30th. They don't necessarily care about all that. They just want to have safe streets so their kids don't have to deal with gangs or drugs. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure their kids' schools are not failing and they're thriving. They want to make sure that if they want to go get a new job, they can get a skill or a trade from a local community college. I mean, that's what Republicans are good at. I get it, all that stuff's out there. But you know what? The weight of the American people is stronger than any of those people that you mentioned that are trying to lean in and influence this stuff. We're not losing elections because people are running Facebook ads at optimal times. We're losing it because we're not focused on our real people's real problems.
Well, there are lots of real problems. There's the cadre of local prosecutors at the state and local level whose elections were funded by George Soros. And they are actually refusing to enforce laws. And you know, these are problems that make our streets less safe. And these are problems that affect the people who get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And you can say that it doesn't matter. These people are only concerned about these things. But I'll tell you what, the results from the outside influences are affecting our life.
Well, I think and certainly understand that. I think you're mischaracterizing the not care. They do care about that stuff. But the thing in front of them is that job, is that career opportunity, is that unsafe street, is that failing school. And so my way to get to them is to sit down at that kitchen table with that single mom with two kids and two jobs. She doesn't care about who's funding the Democratic platform. She doesn't care if a Democrat or Republican's in charge. She cares about getting her and her kids up and out of economic poverty. Mm-hmm. She cares about the next meal that's got to be on the table. She cares about crime in her neighborhood. That's the winning strategy for Republicans. And certainly we want to take on all those other issues. But I think we make it impossible for those movements that are outside our influence to actually be real or influential if we're solving real people's problems.
Well, you certainly hit the nail on the head with one thing. These mothers and fathers who want the best for their kids, even in Democrat-led cities, we are missing the boat. All of them want charter schools, and we should be pushing the heck out of charter schools.
Yep.
That would draw more voters than any lip service we could give to people living in inner cities.
Well, you guys have done an amazing job down there in Florida. I know Jeb Bush was a huge supporter of school choice, and I know Governor DeSantis really campaigned on it. And as I've seen some anecdotal information around his last campaign, it really helped him gather some minority communities to really come his way. And we're huge supporters of school choice here in Georgia. It's a difficult lift. The unions and other kind of moving parts kind of talk against it in fragile ways that really don't make sense. But at the end of the day, a quality education is the greatest stepping stool for those kids to move on and be able to achieve their dreams, whether it's to be a doctor, an entrepreneur, an astronaut, or anything in between.
Absolutely. This is a land of opportunity, and we have to sell that.
Absolutely. If you're just joining us, I want to let you know that we are interviewing Jeff Duncan. He's a Republican Lieutenant Governor of Georgia and author of the new book, GOP 2.0. If someone's just joining us, Jeff, can you let them know where your book's available?
Yeah, they can go to GOP2.org, our website, and order it there. Or they can go on to Amazon, Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, any retail store, whether online or in-store, GOP 2.0.
Okay, and the book is out already, correct?
Yeah, it launched, I think, 2 weeks ago. Super excited.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
When you consider that the media, including television and newspapers, are pretty much making it difficult for conservatives to make their voice heard, what do you think should be done about that?
Well, look, I think both, and I talk about this in the book at a great length, I think both parties and both shades of media are suffering from the same problem. I encourage folks to get their media, get their information from three separate sources. Don't just turn on Fox News if you're a raging Republican. Just don't turn on MSNBC or CNN if you're a raging liberal. Try to find a balanced position to get real information other than just from one side. And look, the media is doing what they need to do to sell tickets, to sell viewership, right? They're putting on display what Americans actually listen to and watch. And that's unfortunate. America is addicted to the short-term sugar high of chaos and confusion inside the political world. So we're all guilty of this. But at the end of the day, the media is going to steer it the way their listeners want them to steer it. And I think there's more of a balanced approach. Look, it's just crazy, you know, to see different. I mean, Fox News, for goodness sake, Donald Trump was bemoaning Fox News as being a liberal rag or whatever his exact names were during the post-election debacle because they were just calling it as they saw it. They couldn't lie on national television and get away with it. There's consequences.
Why? Everybody else does.
Yeah.
Well, and I think you're actually watching some of those play out, some of the lawsuits that are in the billions of dollars, both against media groups and the individuals that spread hate and misinformation about me and my family. Mm-hmm. I mean, to log on to the internet or watch television and listen to these individuals talk about, you know, me and my family taking money from foreign countries. And I mean, how do you explain that to your 11-year-old kid or your 15-year-old kid or your 19-year-old kid? How do you explain those lies for the sole purpose of trying to flip an election and get 50 likes on Twitter? It's just crazy. And I can't do anything about what the left does. I'm a card-carrying Republican. All I can do is focus on what the right does and focus on what we can do better. And we've got a lot to do better.
Well, I was on a very similar note. My heart was broken watching the Kavanaugh confirmation to understand the pain that the left was putting his daughters through. It just breaks your heart that people could be that nasty publicly.
Yeah, it's, you know, look, I've only been in office, I think, coming up on 9 years. So I was a state rep for a few years and campaigned for 2 years for lieutenant governor and then became a lieutenant governor. But, you know, I'm absolutely exhausted with the phrase that, well, that's just politics. Well, that's just politics. Well, you know what? We get what we deserve. This is what you get when you just play politics. Right? You get a divisive tone, you get families ripped apart, you get people's livelihoods destroyed, all because of rumors, innuendos, and lies. And that's certainly what we're seeing play out in both parties. And if we're going to have a future in this country that's worthy of talking about, worthy of writing history books about, then we're going to have to do better than this.
Well, do you think that we maybe should have a Peace Corps for domestics? I mean, we send well-meaning people around the world in the Peace Corps. Maybe we should do that here in our own country.
Well, I think that's a great segue into the four C's, churches and charities and corporations and citizens diving into the needs at home. We, you know, don't necessarily have to travel around the world to find those in need and those that we can help with community efforts. And, you know, I think this is a great period to kind of pause here and talk about the difference between Republicans and Democrats. We have been absolutely demonized as we don't care about those in need, right? So the liberals want to expand the budget and fund everything and give a check and blah, blah, blah. The reality is we Republicans care about those people too. We don't want anybody to go to bed without a roof over their head. Don't want kids to be hungry and left alone on the streets. We just think the government's terrible at fixing that problem. But that means we're going to have to be responsible and get up out of bed and care about those people as individuals, not just because we wrote a check and put it in the mailbox for the IRS. We actually dove into the problem and cared about it. That's where we Republicans can start to make a difference. We care about those people, too. We just don't think the government's the solution to every problem.
So if not Trump, who would you prefer as a candidate for 2024?
Yeah.
Great question, and I wish I had the answer. Time will tell. It's a number of folks are oscillating around, but I will tell you this. It's got to be somebody who's not anti-Trump. It's got to be somebody who's post-Trump, and that's a reality. We got to make sure that somebody's able to, like I said, talk about the things that he did well, give him the accolades on those things, and then move on.
He certainly deserves a lot of accolades.
He does.
You know, he was one of the few people who actually did what he said he was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, though, that there are no people out here on the ground that wouldn't dump him if he turned around and became what he was and what we didn't want him to be. You know, there's no love of Donald Trump the icon. There's a love of Donald Trump, the doer of things that need done.
Yeah, very well put, Rick. Yep. It's true.
So,
Jeff, what are your thoughts? What do you think about DeSantis? We're hearing in Florida that he might be making a run at it.
Well, he's certainly putting on his leadership style on display. He's got, like us in Georgia, no shortages of crisis and dilemmas to deal with. I know that COVID has been an awful obstacle in everybody's way, but certainly in Florida, and he's continuing to put that leadership on display. I've met him a few times. Don't really know too much about him. I know that he's got a great looking resume, and he certainly runs an important, beautiful state. So I think once again, time will tell. My encouragement to anybody is don't try to mimic Donald Trump. Donald Trump was once in a lifetime person. And I think there's great things that he's got, and there's not so great things about his leadership style, just like the rest of us. There's certain things I'm good at, certain things I'm not.
All right. Well, what does the future hold for Jeff Duncan? Where will your path take you from here?
Well, great question. Hopefully I end up at a football game tonight. And look, I hope I get back to elected office. I'm not running again for reelection in Georgia. Not because I don't love the job, but just because the call, the duty to heal and rebuild this party is calling me louder than running again for lieutenant governor. I want to have a conversation with America and not just Georgia. And to do that, I've got to walk away from this job at the end of my term. I hope to serve in elected office again. I hope that opportunity presents itself. If GOP 2.0 turns out to be the right direction for the party and for the country, then certainly those opportunities will present themselves. If it doesn't, then I'll fade away into the sunset and be the happiest man alive, raising my kids and trying to get back engaged in the private sector and hope just champion that this country finds a way to improve itself. But right now, I'm going to focus every bit of energy on GOP 2.0 and getting it off the ground.
Well, Jeff, it has been a pleasure having you on. We are out of time. Jeff Duncan, Republican Lieutenant Governor of Georgia and author of the brand new book, GOP 2.0, available where books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Also on your website, what is that website again?
GOP2.org.
GOP, the number 2.org. Jeff, thank you for your time this morning. It's really been a wonderful hour.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening. If you want to join the fight with us, you can subscribe to the free newsletter. It's called The American. Just text your email to 408-389-1110. 1958. We do not share your number or your information, your email with anyone. It is just simply to send you the newsletter called The American. Again, if you would like that emailed to you, just text us your email at 408-389-1958. If you don't want to do that, you can also call us if you'd like more information, if you'd like to be a guest, if you'd like to be a sponsor on the show, or there's someone you would like to hear us interview. We would love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 941-202-2211. 941-202-2211. You can ask for Rick or myself, Carrie.
Thank you for listening to the Conservative Thought Hour. Remember what Albert Einstein said. The world is a very dangerous place, not because of the evil men in it, but because of the good men who do nothing.